Someone has said the purposes of God often develop slowly because his grand designs are never hurried. Many well-known Bible accounts verify this. For example, God allotted 120 years for Noah to build the ark. 120 years. When comparing Genesis 5:32 and chapter 6, verse 6, it appears that Noah completed the task in 100 years. But who's counting? 100 years? 120 years? Then instead of immediately just overwhelming the earth with water, God caused it to rain for 40 days and 40 nights. Then we begin reading excerpts from Genesis 8, verses 1 through 16. We see, God remembered Noah and all the wild animals and livestock with him in the boat. He sent a wind. Sorry, I lost my spot there. Just a second. He sent a wind to blow across the earth, and the floodwaters began to recede. After 150 days, exactly 5 months from the time the flood began, the boat came to rest on the mountains of Ararat. 2.5 months later, as the waters continued to go down, other mountain peaks became visible. After another 40 days, verse 6, Noah opened the window he had made in the boat and released a raven. The bird flew back and forth until the floodwaters on the earth had dried up. He also released a dove to see if the water had receded and it could find ground. Verse 10, after waiting another 7 days, Noah released the dove again. This time the dove returned to him in the evening. Verse 12, he waited another 7 days and then released the dove again. This time it did not come back. Noah was now 601 years old. He entered the ark, he was 600. On the first day of the new year, 10.5 months after the flood began, the flood waters had almost dried up from the earth. Noah lifted back the covering of the boat and saw that the surface of the ground was drying. 2 more months went by, and at last the earth was dry. Then God said to Noah, "Leave the boat, all of you, you and your wife and your sons and their wives." From the time they entered the ark until the moment they left the ark was little over 1 year. I would have just scooped Noah up, him and his family, sent the flood, dried the earth the next day, and been done with it. But there's tremendous value in waiting. Maturity occurs only with time. A weed can grow overnight, but not an oak tree. God knows the value of time. Much of our frustration in life can be summed up in the statement once made by the 19th century New England preacher, Phillips Brooks. It's said that Brooks was noted for his poise and his quiet manner. At times, however, it's said that even he suffered moments of frustration and irritability. One day, a friend saw him feverishly pacing the floor back and forth like a caged lion. "What's the trouble, Mr. Brooks?" this friend asked. "The trouble is that I am in a hurry, but God is not." In Exodus chapter 1, we read about how Pharaoh, king of Egypt, began to abuse and enslave the Israelites who were living in his land. While this was taking place, in Exodus chapter 2, we read of Moses' birth and how Moses' mother hid him for 3 months. We read of how Pharaoh's daughter took Moses and raised him as her own son, and the Israelites are being mistreated. 40 years pass by, and Moses decides it's time to act. God must simply not be aware of what's going on with his people, the suffering they're enduring. But things don't turn out the way Moses thought they would, and he flees more than 400 miles to the east to the land of Midian. after 40 more years. Exodus 2, verse 23 through 25 tells us, during that long period, the king of Egypt died. The Israelites groaned in their slavery and cried out. And their cry for help, because of their slavery, went up to God. God heard their groaning, and he remembered his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So God looked on the Israelites and was concerned about them. More than 80 years. More than 80 years had passed, and what does God do then? He arranges an encounter with Moses on Mount Sinai. Then he tells Moses to go to tell Pharaoh to let my people go. Then you're probably looking at another month for Moses to make his way back to Egypt. 80 years, what's another month? One day after another. 30 more days of harsh conditions and brutal treatment of the people of Israel. Then we begin reading in Exodus 4, 29 through 31. The text says, Moses and Aaron returned to Egypt and called all the elders of Israel together. Aaron told them everything the Lord had told Moses, and Moses performed the miraculous signs as they watched. Then the people of Israel were convinced that the Lord had sent Moses and Aaron. When they heard that the Lord was concerned about them and had seen their misery, they bowed down and worshiped. Exodus 5 tells of Moses and Aaron then coming before Pharaoh. The long wait is over. The day arrives. This is the moment, you might say, for which Moses was born. Perhaps in the words of Mordecai to Esther, Moses had come to this place, this position, just for such a time as this. Esther 4:14. Picking up in Exodus 5, verses 1 through 9. After this presentation to Israel's leaders, talking about the gathering that Moses and Aaron had just had with the elders, it says, Moses and Aaron went and spoke to Pharaoh. They told him, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Let my people go so that they may hold a festival in my honor in the wilderness. Is that so? Retorted Pharaoh. And who is the Lord? Why should I listen to him and let Israel go? I don't know the Lord, and I will not let Israel go. But Aaron and Moses persisted. The God of the Hebrews has met with us, they declared. So let us take a 3-day journey into the wilderness so we can offer sacrifices to the Lord our God. If we don't, he will kill us with a plague or with the sword. Pharaoh replied, Moses and Aaron, why are you distracting the people from their tasks? Get back to work. Look, there are many of your people in the land, and you are stopping them from their work. How can this be? We get right to the moment where God is supposed to change things, where God is supposed to make things right. Then everything stops. How can an arrogant, ungodly pagan stop God? Well, the fact is, Pharaoh's refusal to submit to God served God's purposes and brought much more glory to God than if Pharaoh had complied immediately. Moses understood this, but only because God had already told him twice that this was going to happen and it would be to God's glory. In Exodus 3, verses 19 and 20, at the burning bush, God said, I know that the king of Egypt will not let you go unless a mighty hand compels him. So I will stretch out my hand and strike the Egyptians with all the wonders that I will perform among them. After that, he will let you go. And just before Moses went back to Egypt in Exodus 4, 21 through 23, we're told that the Lord said to Moses, when you return to Egypt, see that you perform before Pharaoh all the wonders I have given you the power to do, but I will harden his heart so that he will not let the people go. Then say to Pharaoh, this is what the Lord says, Israel is my firstborn son, and I told you, let my son go so that he may worship me. But you refused to let him go, so I will kill your firstborn son. Projecting that whole time period of the 10 plagues. Still, Moses struggled with the consequences of Pharaoh's reaction. Moses and the Israelites learned a valuable lesson, and they had to learn that lesson time and time again. It's a lesson we have to learn time and time again. We need to learn that God deals with things in His time. And we also need to learn that while God works things out in His time, daily duties continue. The world does not stop because we encounter some difficulty. Our daily tasks still need to be performed. The grass still needs to be cut. Clothes still need to be washed. Life goes on. In the text we just read, the Israelites seemed perhaps to expect immediate release. Moses had the meeting with the elders and the news had gotten out. It seems that they had stopped working as hard as they had been working. At least that's the impression that Pharaoh got. We read again in verses 4 and 5, Exodus chapter 5. Pharaoh said to Moses, "Moses and Aaron, why are you distracting the people from their tasks? Get back to work. Look, there are many of your people in the land, and you are stopping them from their work." I'm sure they had gotten excited when they got the news about Moses and Aaron meeting with the elders and that this is all going to come to an end. Certainly it's got to happen soon. Why should we keep working hard when deliverance is so near? George Matherson said, "To run with patience is a very difficult thing. Running is apt to suggest the absence of patience." We think of patience, calm, cool, relaxed, sitting, lying down, something like that. He says, "The eagerness to reach the goal, we commonly associate patience with lying down. We think of it as the angel that guards the couch of the invalid. Yet I do not think the invalid's patience is the hardest to achieve. There's a patience which I believe to be harder, the patience that can run." Now, he'll explain what that means. To lie down in time of grief, to be quiet under the stroke of adverse fortune, implies a great strength. But I know of something that implies a greater strength still. It's the power to work during a crisis. To have a great weight on your heart and still to run. To have a deep anguish in your spirit and still perform the daily tasks. He says it is a Christ-like thing. The easiest thing to do when we're overwhelmed with some difficulty, some trial, is to just want to lay down and quit. Let everything go to waste. Forget it all. What does it matter anyway? While God works things out in His time, difficulties may actually increase. The text tells us that Pharaoh began making things more difficult for the Israelites. It's already bad enough that Moses came and we thought we were going to be released, and now things are just getting even worse. There was no more straw going to be provided for the bricks. Verses 6 through 8, "That same day Pharaoh sent this order to the Egyptian slave drivers and the Israelite foremen, 'Do not supply any more straw for making bricks. Make the people get it themselves, but still require them to make the same number of bricks as before.' Don't reduce the quota. They are lazy. That's why they are crying out, 'Let us go and offer our sacrifices to our God.'" More work was given the Israelites. Verse 9, "Load them down with more work. Make them sweat. That will teach them to listen to lies." Verse 12 says, "So the slave drivers and foremen went and told the people, 'This is what Pharaoh says, I will not provide you any more straw. Go get it yourselves, find it wherever you can, but you must produce just as many bricks as before.' So the people scattered throughout the land of Egypt in search of stubble to use as straw. And of course, brick production was to stay on target. Verse 13. Meanwhile, the Egyptian slave drivers continued to push hard. Meet your daily quota of bricks, just as you did when we provided you with straw, they demanded. So things are getting worse, and now they get even worse because punishment begins for not producing as much. Starting in verse 14, then they whipped the Israelite foreman they had put in charge of the work crews. Why haven't you met your quotas either yesterday or today? They demanded. So the Israelite foreman went to Pharaoh and pleaded with him, please don't treat your servants like this, they begged. We are given no straw, but the slave drivers still demand, make bricks. We are being beaten, but it isn't our fault. Your own people are to blame. But Pharaoh shouted, you're just lazy. That's why you're saying, let us go and offer sacrifices to the Lord. Now get back to work. No straw will be given to you, but you must still produce the full quota of bricks. The Israelite foreman could see that they were in serious trouble when they were told that they couldn't reduce the quota of bricks. And as they left Pharaoh's court, verse 20, they confronted Moses and Aaron who were waiting outside for them. The foreman said to them, may the Lord judge and punish you for making us stink before Pharaoh and his officials. You have put a sword into their hands, an excuse to kill us. Then Moses went back to the Lord and protested. So problems are coming on the people. The people now complain to Moses. Moses now complains to the Lord. Why have you brought all this trouble on your own people, Lord? Why did you send me? Ever since I came to Pharaoh as your spokesman, he has been even more brutal to your people, and you have done nothing to rescue them. Our troubles may actually increase during the times we have to wait for things to get better. We must be careful not to blame God. There's so much we don't understand. Warren Wiersbe once said, the ability to calm your soul and wait before God is one of the most difficult things in the Christian life. He says, our old nature is restless. The world around us is frantically in a hurry. But a restless heart usually leads to a reckless life. While God works things out in His time, we need to remember that delays do not mean denial. Exodus 6, verses 1 through 8, we're told, the Lord then told Moses, now you will see what I will do to Pharaoh. When he feels the force of my strong hand, he will let the people go. In fact, he will force them to leave his land. Going on down into verse 5, you can be sure that I have heard the groans of the people of Israel who are now slaves to the Egyptians, and I am well aware of my covenant with them. Therefore, say to the people of Israel, I am the Lord. I will free you from your oppression and will rescue you from your slavery in Egypt. I will redeem you with a powerful arm and great acts of judgment. I will claim you as my own people and I will be your God. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God who has freed you from your oppression in Egypt. I will bring you into the land I swore to give to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I will give it to you as your very own possession. I am the Lord. The people had doubted and Moses had complained, but God's promises did not change. Deliverance was ahead. The promise at the burning bush would be fulfilled. In the little book of Habakkuk, chapter 2, verse 3, God assured the prophet regarding a vision. He said, this vision is for a future time. It describes the end, and it will be fulfilled. If it seems slow in coming, wait patiently, for it will surely take place. It will not be delayed. The next eight chapters of the book of Exodus tell of God sending the 10 plagues on Egypt, tell of the Israelites being released from bondage and victoriously crossing the Red Sea, all in His time. The little book of James talks about the benefits of difficulties when he says, "Count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. And let patience have its perfect work, that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything." Delay during distress builds and strengthens faith. Walking around Jericho once each day for 6 days, and 7 times on the 7th day, that required faith. It challenged their faith and it strengthened their faith. There are valuable things we cannot learn. There are character traits that we cannot develop without going through a struggle. Struggles test our faith. Struggles help us to accept our frailty. They remind us that this life is only temporary. Just because our troubles are not dealt with immediately, just because they are not resolved when and how we think they should be resolved, that does not mean that God doesn't care. It just means that God sees the entire landscape while we are merely looking through a peephole. God's people have faced some horrific tragedies throughout history, but God doesn't settle all accounts in this life. Lamentations 3, verses 25 and 26 says, "The Lord is kind to everyone who trusts and obeys Him. It is good to wait patiently for the Lord to save us." Let us learn to wait on the Lord. Let us learn to have trust and confidence that God will come through in His time.